Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Monmouth Park. A very good Friday, race fan. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM that way. And at our website, stevebick.com, after yesterday, where the streaming company created a new link, then sent it to us later in the day, and or overnight, virtually. And so I just put it up on Twitter for those that couldn't get the stream yesterday. Of course, you were able to hit the pod and the archive, but the stream back available under this new address. So change the bookmark, whatever bookmark you had. Beautiful, again, absolutely glorious on the Jersey Shore, and the high temperatures, I think everybody pretty much adjusting to it at this point. And I didn't check this morning on what to expect here tomorrow, but there we go. Thank you. That's good, boy. 94 today, and then tomorrow, it's holding 95. Going to be absolutely a perfect day again today with racing resuming, and then tomorrow for Haskell Day. And all things seem copacetic. Checked with Tom Lucci this morning, and no issues, no seem. And so we'll get some of his impressions live in about an hour. He'll join us around 10 o'clock and see what Marcus's thoughts are. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I thought yesterday's discussions, the way they shaped up, they asked a pretty germane question. And Marcus said something on Twitter this morning about, as much as he liked Taba's gallop and the way Taba looks as a happy, bouncy type. And there he is. How do I come here, Brian Skorka? How do I come here and not see you immediately? Here, grab that microphone. You're good with the microphone. Anyway, Marcus is. I'm anxious to ask Marcus about his thoughts, because the speed is signed on here, and then you fold in the question about Jack Christopher's two turns prospects. And it maybe opens things up a little bit. We'll hear from everybody, and a quick rundown before Brian joins us. Brad Free in about 10, 12 minutes at about 9:15. Opening day at Del Mar. Casey, reach for Bing Crosby, and the turf meets the surf, because we'll need it. And we'll check in with Scott Shapiro. I mentioned Marcus. It's also a very big weekend at Woodbine. Ron Gierkink joins us from the Daily Racing Forum north of the border at about 10:20, 25 after Marcus. Scully with his opinions as well. Nick Tamaro, who I understand is going to be on site. He's en route at some point today, and Brian, you're aware of that. And so Nick is going to not be with us, but he's going to be close by. Popo had to scratch today. He's got a meeting, but we will send out some form to win Snap Shots, both for today, the Lake George, of course, one of my favorite races at Saratoga. And it's actually competitive. Chad's got two, but Shug and Arno Delacour are factors. An interesting edition of the Lake George, and, of course, the Oceanside, which is really good. Big, bulky field, and I wrote up races 5 through 10 at Del Mar today. I'll put them up. I haven't put them at the website yet. They're still at Derby Trail, but did Saratoga, and opening day at Del Mar, which normally I do before Saratoga opens, and then, you know, kind of cherry-pick Del Mar, but can't miss opening day at old Del Mar. So there's the lineup. I think I'll probably reach out for Dave Grenig now, since Papo can't join us. But in the meantime, let's say good morning. Brian Skorka here, and, of course, Brian, just the king of the contest circuit. He's everybody's go-to, but Monmouth had him first.
That's right. Here, love, this is, I think we counted yesterday, this is my 17th Haskell, I think, 16th or 17th
wow.
Haskell.
So, that's a run.
As working here, and then there's probably another five or six before that as a fan. So my favorite week of the year, hands down. Saturday's my favorite day of the year, hands down. So not much sleep this week, but I wouldn't have it any other way, and just can't wait for Saturday.
Well, I wanted to get you in first thing this morning to give people a chance to either sign up for the contest or to put together, you know, maybe a partner. It's $1,000 buy-in. It's got a variety of ways to play. Let's give everybody the Haskell Handicapping Challenge rundown.
Yep, so it's $1,000 to enter. As you said, it's an online contest only. So just with, you know, there's no on-site component being the Haskell Day. It's our biggest day. We don't really have the bandwidth to have, you know, players with handicapping contest cards and all of that stuff. So your bets either go in through ExpressBet or TVG. And obviously the New Jersey arm of TVG is 4NJ Bets. So you can be physically on-site. If you are, you just have to make all your bets online through 4NJ Bets. But it's online only, so there's kind of two different paths to register. If you are playing the TVG / 4NJ Bets path, you have to register with me today by 3 p.m. Eastern. You know, so you could find my email or phone, you know, on the Monmouth Park website or anywhere in the contest world. But you do have to register with me. I'll take your credit card, run the money today, 3 p.m. Eastern, if you're going to play TVG or 4NJ Bets. If you're going to play ExpressBet, you kind of have two options. You could either register through me, I'll take your credit card, or ExpressBet does have a way that you can register right through the ExpressBet site, and you can do that up until noon tomorrow. So ExpressBet, you can sign up right through them up until noon tomorrow. TVG or 4NJ Bets, you have to sign up with me by today, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern.
What's the format?
So Monmouth Park races only. We have 14 of them. You have to bet at least five of those races, $100 per race minimum. So it's a $1,000 buy-in, $500 is your bankroll, $500 is the entry fee.
Nice.
So you have to bet at least five races of at least $500 a piece, win, place, show, exacta, daily double, or any combination of those only. And then, obviously, you know, we pay out the top five finishers get cash, and then it's a combination of BCBC seats and NHC. We base the prizes to start off 150 entries. Knock on wood, we're on pace to be pretty well above that. So for every 20 entries above 150, we're going to add an extra BCBC seat. So gun to my head right now, we'll probably be around probably five BCBC seats,
wow,
two NHC, and the cash prizes, which, you know, first place cash prize is a little over $15,000. We pay down to fifth place. So it should be, you know, the card is great, as I'm sure you've been talking about all week. Good card on Saturday for Haskell Day. Plenty of stakes, so plenty of big fields and good wagering action.
Out of curiosity, when you said all 14 races, so people can play
absolutely
race 13 and 14 after Haskell.
100%.
Okay, all right. Which is, you know, sometimes we cut it off at the feature so they can play all the way to the end. And is it winner's choice when it comes to the seats?
It is. Yep. You know, the cash, obviously, depending on where
cash
you finish, you get your cash. But then the top, however many, if like I said, if it turns out to be five BCBC and two NHC, the top seven get the pick of what they want.
Very nice.
One of each.
It's one of the reasons everybody loves playing at Monmouth. And, in fact, we mentioned Nick, and Nick just got his seat, right?
Yep, I think I saw that come through the wire the other day.
Did he? Was it?
Not here.
It wasn't here? Who was the most recent? Who got seats the most? You had one, what?
Pick Your Prize was our last contest.
Right.
So we gave out, we had like 28 people qualify that.
Yeah, time. It's crazy.
Yeah, that was, we had 290 entries for Pick Your Prize. So that was
unbelievable.
That was pretty
unbelievable.
Impressive.
Well, give the contact how they get a hold of you.
Yep, so easiest way probably is email bskirka, S-K-I-R-K-A, at monmouthpark.com. That's probably the easiest way. I'll get you the entry form, or you can call me. But, you know, email is probably easiest to contact me, easiest to track me down. And then again, you just have to be signed up by 3 p.m. Eastern. So anybody interested in TVG or playing through 4NJ Bets, make sure you reach out to me today in the next few hours. ExpressBet, you have a little longer. You could sign up till noon tomorrow right through ExpressBet.
Well, and of course, some news yesterday involving TVG and the FanDuel apparatus,
I've been so locked in on Haskell and in the world,
I understand.
Missed these breaking news.
Well, there's a repackaging, essentially, of the two TVG channels. Maybe May have to get Kip Levin or whoever to kind of detail. We historically have really not had. When we come here, we'd have Tom Cassidy and over the years, and whoever was on hand for TVG. But essentially, FanDuel TV, it's going to become the flagship channel is going to become a sports betting platform, more or less, and TVG2 will be the horse racing focus.
Gotcha.
But they'll be racing on the big channel, on the main channel. And I think a lot of people projected this, right from early on. But very interesting. We'll see. I only saw the press release and not the, a lot of the trickle down.
No, I think it'll all be interesting, and we're all looking forward to whether it's FanDuel or we're Caesars here. Now that BetMakers is here, hopefully the day comes, whether it's next year or 2 years from now, where everything is under one wallet and it's all the same. Like even this year now, so we're here in New Jersey. So if you want to bet Power Mutual horse racing, you need a 4NJ Bets account. If you want to bet sports, there's a number of sports betting companies here in New Jersey. We're Caesars, of course, and then now once we get fixed odds horse racing up and running online, now you have to download a Monmouth Bets account. So hopefully that day comes, sooner rather than later, where there's one app and you can just kind of toggle through and bet tote wagering, fixed odds wagering, sports wagering, parlay, all the stuff. If that day comes a year or so from now, that'll be a great thing.
Well, the other portions of, and I'm just making sure that everybody's okay on the. Stream side of things, I guess they are okay. Good. I just got an email that I just went from the web dev people. It's a multifaceted thing that we got to deal with here. Any other insights about tomorrow? What kind of a crowd do we expect?
It should be, it's annually the biggest day of the year. It's going to be hot. It's the middle of the summer, of course. So, we have plenty of air conditioning here. We're close to the beach, so it traditionally is cooler here than it is even, a mile inland. So, it's the best day of the year in terms of, in my opinion. You get a great combination of people that are here, obviously, like all of us, that are here because there's six stakes races and it's the best card of the year. There's plenty of people here because, we advertise it as the biggest party of the year, and they're here to show their face and get dressed up and have a great time. And we love that.
Sure.
Whether you come out and drink three or four beers and bet $3, or whether you're here and don't drink all day and bet $1,000, we love all of that. It's the atmosphere here. If you're at a Haskell, in my opinion, the atmosphere is second to none because of that. You get, everyone in the Partier luxury boxes, down to the picnic area, and everyone at, 5:49 or whatever time the Haskell goes off, everybody stops, turns towards the track, and screams for the horse that they bet on, whether it's $2 or $2,000. So I just can't wait for tomorrow. I get here bright and early. I actually get here before the sun even comes up and leave after the sun goes down, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It's by far my favorite day of the year, and I think the race itself is fascinating. The matchup between, Taba and Jack Christopher, there's as soon as I start leaning in one direction, the other horse pulls me back because there's so, you start leaning towards Jack Christopher, which I am, but there's obviously the question about the distance, and I think he'll be able to get it, but you don't really know, and you're not going to know until he crosses the wire, because I feel like him and Taba are going to be kind of head-to-head one way or the other in the stretch, and Taba is proven at the distance. Jack Christopher is not. You have a 9-time winning trainer in Bob Baffert who wants to make a big splash now that he's back in his first race back in the national scene. Taba is going to have to be ready for this race. I feel like they're going to put him on the lead and say, hey, we're the best horse in the race. Run us down, Jack Christopher, if you can. And I think it's going to be a great stretch duel and see what happens.
The thing about that, not just the question of the two-turn issue, such as it may be, but there's a lot of speed in here, and I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you saw because it came out of this office, the wonderfully warm story about Jesse, Jesus Cruz, and Benevengo. What a great story, and involving Wasabi and you know, him basically, you know, thinking that his training career was over before it started. And from there, the story got magical. And, you know, here he is, you know, with a not a barn exclusive to Wasabi, but I think 15 out of 17, something in that range. And Benevengo is going to at least provide outside stalking pressure on Jack Christopher. And there's potential, I would think, for Florent Giroux, whose tendency is to go forward, to move forward with Cyberknife and at least establish position. So there's a real case to be made that this thing gets hot and somebody is poised late to pick things off. And I mean, is it? I forgot about Howling Time, who's got speed. I mean, I had no interest post-draw in White Abario, but you do have a very clever rider switch to Rosario to consider, and Joel could just sit and watch it unfold and pounce at will.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very interesting first 100 yards because, again, here's Bob Baffert with Taba, who's won this race 9 times. Taba, you know, he's not void of speed. He hasn't been on the lead in his races, but he's not void of speed. He has, you know, an innermost draw relative to the other horses. You know, are they just going to... Bob Baffert has won a lot of Haskells on the lead. Are they going to come out and say, hey, we're not going to fool around. We don't want to sit third and fourth behind a Benevengo or somebody. We're just going to go to the front and,
his tendency.
Let the best horse win. Yeah. And if that's the case, what do horses like Benevengo and Cyberknife, you know, do they all just say, okay, heck with it, let's all go?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, who decides to take back? Does it turn out to be just a match race between the two? Or does like you said, does White Abario get a trip in behind them? I think it'll be a very interesting first 100 yards, and I totally expect it to be a very interesting last 100 yards, because, again, unless Jack Christopher is just an absolute freak of nature and monster and is 10 lengths ahead, you know, with 100 yards to go, I think there's still going to be, you know, you get that roar of the crowd here that you do at a lot of big races, but, you know, I'm biased to Haskell Day. That roar of the crowd when, you know, what if Jack Christopher is ahead by a length with Taba bearing down on him? It's a Bob Baffert horse bearing down on him on a horse that has some distance, you know, potential distance limitations. That'll be some roar in the stretch. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm in the Jack Christopher camp. I think he's a incredible talent, but it's impossible to toss a trainer who's won the Haskell 9 times with a clearly very talented horse.
Well, that's the question. And you mentioned the stretch. Well, the Shore's greatest stretch. Fast Times at the Jersey Shore and Haskell Day tomorrow. Brian Skirka, give the address, the email address for people to get a hold of you for the Haskell Challenge one more time.
Yep, so B as in Brian, then my last name Skirka, Skirka at MonmouthPark.com. Again, if you're playing TVG or 4NJ Bets, which is the New Jersey arm of TVG, you just have to be signed up with me by 3 p.m. Eastern this afternoon.
Brian Skirk, everybody, who is the go-to. If you got a racetrack and you're not doing a contest, Brian will help you. He's available for consult. Kentucky Downs coming up. We'll talk to Hammer later.
Colonial Downs in a couple weeks.
That's
and
right.
And Kentucky Downs a couple weeks after that.
Outstanding. Brian Skirk, everybody. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Skirka. Brad Free is going to join us, and we're going to start talking about opening day at Del Mar. And Dave Grenig confirmed for later. So a busy morning underway. And our first conversation about Haskell. And I want to go back for a second because it was the authentic, right? It was the authentic Haskell win. I couldn't remember if Authentic had maintained the lead and held off New York Traffic, or if New York Traffic had been on the lead. But essentially, New York Traffic chased the whole way and was edging closer as the wire approached. Yeah, beat him an Authentic winner by a nose. And just looking through the list was the heat delayed. the heat delayed was which year? maximum securities year. Okay, so 2019, and that was of course crazy. So, you know, by all rights, by comparison, this temperature is positively comfortable and pleasant compared to that situation. Brad Free coming up next, but before we do that, let me also, I'll save it for Dave Grenick. We can't reach Dave until hour three, but obviously yesterday, with the rain that came to Saratoga, that created just invariably the most irksome and impossible situation for everybody, for players. It's just so maddening, the off-the-turf decision, and you know, I don't know what the easiest way to rectify this is. I mean, if you take the races off the turf in advance of the rain, and then the rain doesn't come, that'll drive everybody crazy. Most notably, Connections, who then are been waiting for a race, and now it comes off the turf. The obvious outcry about no time, no opportunity for anybody to adjust. You just don't have any chance. And then, of course, came the all decision. And Dave was chronicling it as it was all happening. And I mean, ultimately, making the third race yesterday an all, it's probably the most equitable result, but it's also a change to the rule. I mean, do you live by the rule? Do you try to do the right thing? It just seems like there's never a satisfying mechanism and outcome in that situation. Deciding to take the race off before rain comes, taking it off after the rain starts, it's invariably a fiasco. Brad Free doesn't have to deal with it as much, I'm sure, as those of us with more volatile weather circuits and ovals. Brad, good morning.
Good morning. It never rains in Southern California. That's the lyric from the famous song. But it is summertime, and looking forward to opening day at Del Mar this afternoon.
Brad, talked to Steve Anderson yesterday. We laid out some of the opening salvos and storylines from your perspective. Give us a few of the top line stories here as this late start to the Del Mar season kicks off.
Yeah, well, for one thing, the Del Mar Racing Office has really come out with both barrels blazing. There were 10 races scheduled on Saturday. They ended up with 11. There were 10 races scheduled on Sunday, another 11 race card. The fields are huge. The gambling should be good. The quality is deep. This is kind of a throwback weekend, back to the old days when you expected to see full fields from, race one all the way through to the nightcap. And this weekend, there are plenty of opportunities with big fields. We don't have any of these six-horse fields where only two horses can win. These fields all weekend long are huge, and I'm looking forward to it. There's some comebackers that are going to be relatively short prices, including McKinnon this afternoon in the Oceanside. You know, do you want to take 5-2 on McKinnon, who hasn't started in several months? On Saturday, the Grade 2 San Clemente, there's four fillies in this mile turf race trained by Phil D'Amato. I picked a filly named Bella Bell, who, another comebacker who hasn't started in some time. She faces Island of Love, another D'Amato trainee. On Sunday, the Wicker Stakes drew none other than Grade 1 winner Smooth Like Straight. He drew post 12 in a 13-horse field at a mile on grass. It's the first time that Smooth Like Straight will be running in a non-graded stakes race in a couple years. I think he's a standout on class, and he could certainly use a confidence builder. I think he'll be tough to beat in the Wicker despite the bad draw. We have a mile-and-a-half dirt race, the Cougar, also on Sunday with last year's winner, Tis the Magician. Some two-year-old races. I mean, opening weekend at Del Mar really has everything that a racing fan could ask for. Big fields, price potential, competitive racing, and it should be a blast. Can't wait for it to get started this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Brad Free with us from the Daily Racing Forum, and of course the Southern California longtime lead handicapper analyst. And Brad, you put together the two-year-old story. In fact, Dave Grenig told us a couple of weeks ago when we were talking the two-year-olds with Dave. I call these long-running columns that Jay Privman has done forever, and Dave on the East Coast. It's a clip and save opportunity, because these horses, even if they don't show up over the next 7 weeks, they're going to show up soon, and it's always a productive conversation. Some thoughts about the juveniles that we're going to see here over the next several weeks.
Yeah, we're going to see some good ones, not only this summer, but into fall and even into next year. There are some very expensive, high-profile Colts and fillies that will be making their career debuts either this summer or later on, including the $3.5 million Bernardini Colt by the name of Hajazi, trained by Bob Baffert. Ultimate Gamble, I'm really looking forward to watching him run. I don't know that he will win first time out for trainer Mark Glatt, but he is a Medaglia d'Oro who cost $1.75 million as a two-year-old. He's a sibling to a sprinter, a champion sprinter by the name of Dre Fong, but Glatt believes that Ultimate Gamble is a two-turn horse. And even if he doesn't win first time out, whenever that is, probably the first six and a half that comes up this summer, 6.5 furlongs for two-year-olds, he'll be running late, and Glatt is really looking forward to stretching this guy out. Trainer John Sadler has a Justify that is very well regarded, a horse by the name of Nuclear that cost $1.5 million. And he's just beginning his workout pattern. Sadler believes that he's going to come to hand very quickly. So those are at least three of them that I'm looking forward to watch run. Hajazi, Ultimate Gamble, and Nuclear. Hajazi, who knows when he'll make his career debut. He looks, at least his workout pattern, is very similar to the workout pattern of Corniche last year. Corniche, of course, did not make his debut until, I believe, September. So Hajazi could be on a similar type of pattern. And likely, if he does run this summer, it's probably not going to be until a little bit later on in the meet, but we'll monitor Hajazi's situation. And of course, Bob Baffert has the deepest roster of two-year-olds of anyone in Southern California. It happens year after year after year. He's a 15-time winner of the Del Mar Futurity, and he gets a deep roster, and they produce for Baffert. So he has some very good ones. He has a rocket ship running on, believe it's Sunday, a two-year-old colt making his career debut going 5 furlongs. That horse's name is Having a Meltdown, and he is fast, based on what I've seen from workouts on XBTV.com. Having a Meltdown, making his career debut, going 5 furlongs in race 4 on Sunday. Baffert also entered Dillinger, who's up on the also eligible list. So, you know, Baffert's going to be a presence throughout all these two-year-old races this summer, but there are some other good ones out there that he'll have to knock off. The Glatt, the Sadler has a deep stable. Trainer Peter Miller said he has the deepest stable of two-year-olds that he has ever had in summer. So looking forward to watching these babies run. That's one of the fun things about summer. Summer at Del Mar is all about grass racing and two-year-olds. And then when September rolls around, we're going to find out who can finish second behind Flightline in the Pacific Classic. So it should be a really cool summer. The two-year-olds are always a highlight. And the two-year-old piece that I wrote is in today's edition of Daily Racing Forum, the July 22nd edition, and there are dozens and dozens of two-year-olds to, you know, put on your list of horses to watch, and many of them will be seeing action this summer.
Hey, Brad, I got an offbeat question that is juvenile adjacent, because it came up yesterday with Steve Anderson. What is your cowbred two-year-old policy? Because people are going to be seeing, most notably, looking at this first group that starts the pick six today, the fifth race, you better get familiar with Smoke'em, who I don't know how many mares he covered, but boy, is he well represented in this group. I'm just curious what your thoughts are about the cowbred scene.
Well, the cowbreds, they are coming out of the woodwork already. In fact, Today's race is for cowbred two-year-old fillies. And the reason there are 11 races on Saturday instead of the 10 that were scheduled is because this cowbred two-year-old filly race oversubscribed, and so they wrote it back as an extra. So now we have two full fields of cowbred two-year-old maiden fillies on this afternoon, race number 5, and then again Saturday in race number 7. Two big fields of Calibrate fillies, and it's a deep group. This afternoon, race 5, the favorite is kind of logical. Number 9, Smokin' China, the 5-2 morning line favorite, finished second in both her starts. The fillies that defeated her in both her races each came back to win stakes races. So Smokin' China's form has already been validated, and she's the, you know, quote, logical selection. However, there are a couple other first-time starters that I kind of prefer because I believe they are cranked and ready to fire, and those being number 4, Dancing Cat, and number 5, Cheddar Cash. Dancing Cat is a daughter of Dancing Candy, who is a terrific debut sire. His progeny are 5-for-22, first time out at age 2. Trainer Peter Miller, I said that earlier that he's loaded with 2-year-olds. This filly appears to have worked very well at San Luis Rey Downs. And Cheddar Cash, by another win early sire named Straight Fire. Straight Fire progeny are 4-for-18, first time out at age 2. Trainer Louis Mendez can crank them up. Edwin Maldonado is aboard Cheddar Cash. And these two first-time starters, Dancing Cat and Cheddar Cash, are going to give the favorite, Smokin' China, a run for her money. But it goes deeper than just those three. Michael McCarthy has an upstart, a cowbred owned by Mike Rapoli that they purchased for $130,000. And he looks like the filly, looks like she's live first time out. You know, you have a Gervino, not the greatest stallion, but Sarande has been training very well and reportedly has speed. So this is a very, very interesting race, the first 2-year-old race of the season, race number 5 for Calbreds. And then, of course, on Saturday we have the overflow of the fillies that did not get into the Friday race, and also a Calbred race for that's open to either gender, Colson Geldings in race number 8. And a horse by the name of the Big Wom is going to be the favorite in race number 8 on Saturday. So the Calbred 2-year-olds, it looks like a pretty deep group. It seems like they all waited for Del Mar. We had some relatively small fields late in the Santa Anita meet and over at Los Alamitos, but no such thing as a small field this summer at Del Mar with the Calbred 2-year-olds.
Well, one thing that you can do to help decipher particularly first-time starters. There's also, of course, the elders, the 3 and ups that are going to come out, and there are plenty of debuting older types, including John Sheriffs with a Ghost Zapper filly in the 7th, Snip at 10-1, who I think may be live in there in a group with some talent. But Toby Terrell is, of course, the longtime Southern California clocker, and he handles all of the clocking report information available at DRF. And we love Andy Harrington, too, but Toby Terrell does a terrific job. And before we talk about Saturday and that San Clemente and the Oceanitas, Brad, the Oceanside, your thoughts, and anything else that stands out for you on today's card?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the comeback of McKinnon. I know he's the 5-2 favorite, but really on class, he would appear to be a standout. You know, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last fall turned out to be one of the more productive juvenile turfs that has ever been run. 6 horses from that race have since won stakes races out of the juvenile turf, compared to only 1 stakes winner coming out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile on dirt. I think that McKinnon, who finished 3rd in the juvenile turf last fall behind Modern Games and ran well in defeat, they tried him on the main track a couple times, and then in February they said, you know what, let's put him away. He's had a long campaign. Let's bring him back in summer on grass at Del Mar, and boom, here we are. He has trained exceptionally well for his comeback, McKinnon has, and I think he's going to take some beating. I know that, you know, we all want to cash a bet on a price, and maybe, you know, advocating a wager on a favorite who hasn't started since February is, you know, perhaps misguided. But I'm really looking forward to watching the comeback of McKinnon. He's just the class of the Oceanside field, and he's training like a horse that should fire first start back. He's up against Balnikov, who completely bombed last time out, but his runner-up finished 2 starts back in the American Turf at Churchill Downs. He would probably would have won that race had he broken well and not lost so much ground, but everything, you know, went wrong, and he still finished second, Belnikov did. He bounced next time when blinkers were added. Blinkers are off this afternoon for the Oceanside, and I would expect Belnikov to run a little bit more close to how he ran in the American Turf. My one concern regarding Belnikov is this. The American Turf, those were the best grass three-year-olds in early May, probably in the country. But that race has turned out to be kind of a negative key race. I think there's only been one horse who ran in the American Turf at Churchill Downs that came back to do anything, and a lot of disappointments along the way. So I wonder if maybe his runner-up finish was partly the product of who he was running against, which in hindsight turned out to be kind of a modest field. So anyway, long-winded way of saying, looking forward to watching the favorite run in the Oceanside this afternoon, and that's number one, McKinnon, in race eight.
Well, beyond McKinnon and Belnikov, there's a hatful of double-digit prices, Brad, in that race that are pretty interesting, and actually some that are working, you know, particularly well. Nero Tulip feels like an outsider that may have a bit of a look. That Royal and Rando coming down from Golden Gate. How about Mark Glatt, who is one of my favorite West Coast horsemen, and Dandy Warhol feels like Glatt has been pointing for the summer, from what I can tell.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Why is Dandy Warhol in this Oceanside Stakes as opposed to the one other van on Saturday? It's very interesting, ambitious spot, and Glatt's not a guy who's going to waste a start with a horse that doesn't have a chance. Dandy Warhol, he won his only start by more than four lengths in Ireland early this year. Purchased privately, now making his U.S. debut. I don't know how good he is. I don't know who he beat that day, but it's a very interesting, intriguing entrant for Glatt. And I agree with you. I think Glatt does an outstanding job. Looking forward to the comeback later this year of his best three-year-old grass horse, and that's Moglev, who's back in training and doing super and pointing for the Franklin Simpson later this year on the East Coast. So Dandy Warhol is a contender. Nero Tulip, I'm sorry. I read about this horse who had so-called trouble, and I guess the best you can really say with regards to Nero Tulip is that it was inconclusive. He didn't have anywhere to go through the lane. He was 17-1, and he finished in front of two horses. That was his U.S. debut. He'll have to step it up to beat this field. Royal and Rando is very interesting. His numbers are getting better and better and better, and we know he can grass, and he comes off a nine-length win on dirt at Pleasanton. So who knows how good Royal and Rando is. He's listed at 20-1. I don't think that price is going to hold with his thoroughgraph figure of 7.5 last time out, which happens to be the fastest last start figure in the field. Actually, it is the highest, 7.5. As a matter of fact, got a 7.75 last time in a dirt sprint. So anyway, you're right. Lots of ways to go if you're trying to beat the favorite or looking for some prices underneath McKinnon in the exact and or try. Royal and Rando is a horse that I would definitely use. He's a pro, five-time winner from 13 starts with ascending speed figures, and he fits in this field.
Brad Free with us. And Brad, how about a couple of spots on Saturday, most notably the big, bulky fields that we're going to see in the two stakes. And, of course, the Oceanitas, the companion restricted stake to the Oceanside, and the San Clemente, which absolutely came up fascinating. And, in fact, I should mention the Beat Bick contest back for its second weekend. Last year or the year before, I went to town with Mucho Unusual and managed to catch her those two performances of hers. And here I'm looking for Amy C in the San Clemente tomorrow.
Boy, this is another race. It's similar to the Oceanside in that there's a lot of potential. The story of the San Clemente is basically that trainer Phil D'Amato has four in the field, and they all have a chance. I chose Bella Bell, whose U.S. debut back in January was super impressive. She came home in 23 and a piece, her final quarter mile, and I think that win kind of surprised D'Amato and the Phillies owners. They were planning on originally running her twice in winter, but when she dazzled, first started, and they thought she might have needed the race as well. She dazzled in her U.S. debut, and I think at that point they said, whoa, we have something a little bit better than what we thought, so let's put her away. There's really not much point in a three-year-old grass filly campaigning through winter. There's, you know, $100,000 grade three stakes throughout winter and spring, and who cares? So I think they put her away with the idea of bringing her back this summer at Del Mar, where the graded rankings are higher, the purses are bigger, and Bella Bell has trained very well for her comeback. She's making her first start since January, and I picked her on top, but only because I had to pick somebody. Island of Love, I should have given a little bit more love to, because she is solid. Since Juan Hernandez began riding her, both of her starts have been super. She won the Grade 3 Senorita, finished second to Cairo Memories. We're going to see Cairo Memories in the Del Mar Oaks next month. But Island of Love is very, very sharp right now. And one of the more intriguing entrants in the San Clemente is a filly who's never stepped foot on grass. And that's number one, Lady T, who is getting better and better and better for trainer John Sheriff. She's by Into Mischief out of a Malibu Moon mare, so there's no reason why she won't ride grass. She finished second last time in the Grade 2 Summertime Oaks. And the pace scenario of the San Clemente appears to be relatively tepid, and that benefits Lady T, who has a forwardly placed running style. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if Victor Espinosa just put her on the lead and said, catch me if you can. She's good right now, and if she handles grass, Lady T will definitely make an impact. This race has been won a couple times recently by fillies who have never raced on grass previously, Storm Mesa and Eden's Moon in recent years. So Lady T kind of trying to follow in their footsteps. There's another horse that I don't like the price on this filly, but I suspect she might drift up, and that's number 12. I'll probably butcher her name, Mies Lamy, in from Ireland, and she's listed at 8-1, and that seems a little short. I don't know that I'd be interested in her at 8-1, but if she drifts up to double digits, once upon a time, European imports making their U.S. debut at Del Mar were an automatic bet. It seemed to kind of subside over the last few years, but Mies Lamy, who arrived last week from Ireland, shipped to Del Mar on Saturday. Her new trainer, Patty Gallagher, said she has settled in fine. In fact, it took him by surprise how well she has done since arriving. And if you can draw a line through her most recent start, when she finished 15th in a Group 3, and go back to her relatively decent fourth-place finish in a Grade 3, two starts back, and her runner-up finish in a handicap race in Ireland, three starts back, Mies Lamy fits in this field, the San Clemente. So she's fresh off the plane. I'm hoping her odds drift up a little bit. Mies Lamy, again, I picked Bella Bell over Lady T, but boy, this is another dynamite race. And then earlier on Saturday, the two-year-old fillies made the special weight open, and Bob Baffert has the morning line favorite, number 11, Halos in Heaven, a daughter of Curlin, produced by champion filly Indian Blessing. Indian Blessing has not been the greatest broodmare producer so far, and you don't normally expect a Curlin to win first time out going to 5/8. I believe that Michael McCarthy has a very good filly named Right Reasons, and she's drawn on the inside, not the greatest spot, but her workouts on XBTV look solid. She's by Into Mischief, and Victor Espinosa is aboard for McCarthy. And at 6-1, I might gamble on number one, Right Reasons, in race number 4. But lots of opportunities on Saturday in the San Clemente and the two-year-old filly race, race 4.
Before we wrap up, Brad Free, talk about the Oceanitas. I mentioned the beat pick contest week 2, and I went with Amy C. I mean, Phil D'Amato, it's just amazing. And you know, I don't know if you want to comment on this or not, but it strikes me funny that when Chad Brown has multiple horses in a stake, you know, the internet goes berserk. Phil has 3 or 4 horses in a stake. Nobody says a word.
Well, I mean, you know, D'Amato has the deepest grass stable in California. Yeah. D'Amato trains all the grass horses. Baffert trains all the two-year-olds and early-season three-year-olds. That's just the way it is out here. And I don't think anybody's complaining about it. I'm not, anyway. Yeah, D'Amato has some good ones in here. Amy C. is rock solid. Lightly raced filly, making only her third start of 2022. I picked her second. That was an impressive impressive second start back, coming down the hill at Santa Anita, and she's solid on the stretch out. We already know that she can run long. She won going a mile and 16th at Belmont last June. The horse to beat, however, in the Oceanitas is number four, Avenue de France, who finished second last time out behind Park Avenue in a $200,000 stakes race at Lone Star. If Avenue de France had won that race, she would not be eligible for the Oceanitas. And the filly that beat her, Park Avenue, is a very good filly trained by John Sadler, who we are going to see twice this meet in the Grade 2 Yellow Ribbon and Grade 2 John Mabey. Avenue de France is dropping in class into this restricted stakes race. Her last two starts have been solid. She's the horse to beat. She's also the 3-1 favorite. There's a 12-1 shot in here in the Oceanitas that I will be betting on. Her comeback race was a runner-up finish in an allowance race. I'm talking about number one, Quattro L. She had not raced since May of 2021. She came back in a race that she had to need, and she finished well going a mile. This is her second start back. She earned a good number. We know that she has a touch of class. She finished third in the Grade 3 Jimmy Durante at Del Mar as a two-year-old in late 2020. She won a stakes race next time out. She was off for a long time. She well in her comeback. I expect her to make a forward move. She will be rolling late, and if she's double-digit odds, number one, Quattro L, will get my money. But you have to beat Avenue de France and number seven, Amy C. Those are my one, two most likely winners of the Oceanitas.
Brad, nice start, obviously, to the Del Mar season these first 3 days. We'll check in with you whenever we can, whenever you're available to lead us through. And, of course, Brad with his weekly notebook that is invaluable and his horses to watch. And there'll be plenty of horses to watch when you're talking about 12 and 14 horses in races. There's going to be trips and bet backs and a lot to look forward to as the season gets started at Old Del Mar.
Yeah, it should be a great summer, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Always tremendous. Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free won. We're going to talk to Scott Shapiro next, but as we do it, Case, I don't know if you got Bing queued up, but there's no way that we go opening day without a little turf meets the surf. And I know certainly that Scott is going to be heartsick. Long time that he spent on the West Coast, and has now, of course, relocated. So,
1937, Bing Crosby had his answer. There he was,
here we go.
Welcoming that first wave of fans to the new Del Mar racetrack. Crosby and his pals made Del Mar a summer hit.
Yep. Wasn't the lead-in that you were looking for. All right. No. All right, Case. We'll find it when you get it. There it is.
Meets the surf down at Old Del Mar. Take a plane, take a train, take a car. There's a smile on every face and a winner in each race. Where the turf meets the surf at Del Mar.
There it is. The turf meets the surf. One of the great jingles. Are they still doing that? the guest singer. Did they do that last summer? I don't remember. There was that summer that they trotted out a singer every day, sort of like what they did after Harry Carey passed, and to sing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." And there were some good ones, and there were some not so good ones, right? Shap is going to join us next. As we wait for Scott, I do want to slip in a story from the other day, and I know I tweeted the connection to it, and the Colonial, very nice that Colonial specifically took the time to feature Rosario Montañez's comeback win. And you heard Rosario with us years ago, and maybe 4 years ago, when he was coming back from the previous horrific accident that he had. He has had some terrible luck, and he is such an inspiring kid. And that conversation that we had with him at Saratoga on a, I think it was on a dark day, and in fact, it was with him and Jose Santos, I think, joined us the same day. Yesterday was Jose's birthday. But Montañez has had these two extensive interruptions in his career, and he's just fearless, and he just refuses to have his career choice dictated to him by injury, and that's what's so amazing about him. This would have, you know, the first injury where he had so many reconstructive surgeries, and it's just unbelievable that he came back from that one and then to suffer another one and work his way back. So it took him three dozen or so rides to get back to the winner's circle, but he did it, and I'm constantly amazed about how he, you know, just refuses to, you know, to give up essentially, and to stop, you know, stop riding. I'm also amazed, actually, you know, when I look up, as an aside, you know, there's certain names among jockeys that, you know, when you go to look up stats, you know, you got to thumb through a big, long list. It surprises me slightly. There's only been, at least in modern statistics, when it comes to the way Equibase tracks, there's only been two Montañezes, Juan Montañez and Rosario. It's just funny. There'd be certain names that prolific when it comes to riders, and others that I noticed this the other day. I said to myself, boy, you would have thought there were more Montañez. There were, who was the, oh my gosh, what was his first name? Maybe, I don't know how big of a baseball fan Scott Shapiro is, but the big first baseman.
Willie
Montañez, thank you. Well done. Right?
I remember Willie, but Montreal Expo, maybe?
Exactly.
Maybe the Phillies? I don't, a couple teams.
I think he had a stint with the Mets, if I'm not mistaken.
You might be right. Yep. He was a pretty good player, if I remember correctly.
He was a poor man's, kind of a poor man's Andre Scalarraga. And I'm pulling it up, and you're right. Phillies, absolutely the Phillies and the Mets. Willie Montañez. I wonder how many Montañezes have been in baseball. I'm sure more than we've had jockeys. Scott, I just talked to Brad Free. Not sure if you were listening at your desk, but I had to figure that This is a bittersweet day. I know you love the move you made to Kentucky, but on a day like opening day at Del Mar, I'm sure you miss that.
You took the words right out of my mouth, and yeah, I did get to listen to Brad. And yep, I love living here. Everything has gone tremendously since moving to Kentucky, but this day, along with some winter days, tops the list of the days that I miss most being in Southern California, and but still very excited. I mean, just a tremendous time of the year with the Haskell on tap, obviously Saratoga in full form, and then having Del Mar each night instead of in the afternoons to get involved in, and two very, very good cards. David Jerkins and the racing office out there did a very good job of putting these cards together. I prefer today's card in terms of opinions, but both of them very challenging and ones I highly recommend people diving into if they haven't already.
Well, there's so much, and the delayed start to the Del Mar season kind of, I don't know, it doesn't complicate matters, but it absolutely, I'm sure, is going to have players scrambling and trying to figure out, you know, how to budget themselves and also lay out, the various stake timings. That can always be challenging because the Haskell card here at Monmouth, and then you go to Saratoga, and we got the coaching club and the Caress, which came up very good, the turf sprint, and then Del Mar day two, first Saturday. So and that's just the highlights. There's also good racing across the border at Woodbine. So plenty of places to, you can shop for price if that's your approach, or for field size and for the sequences that are the most attractive. What's your pleasure, Scott, this weekend?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. It's very important to kind of figure out what you want to do beforehand with all these great options and kind of plan your budget accordingly with your strongest opinions. Obviously, action's fun, but you want to, put most of your budget towards something that you have a stronger opinion about. But couldn't agree with you more on everything. Let's take a look primarily at the today/tonight's card at Del Mar. I like the card quite a bit. And I like the opener. There's a horse that... there's a few horses, a lot of horses that I saw at Churchill Downs racing at Saratoga, of course, but a few each day thus far, it looks like, going to be shipping in, trying to take advantage of that beautiful ship and wind boat our offers. And number two, Carnivore, is one of those horses. First off, the claim for Robertino Diodoro, and, two back this horse at Churchill on May 15th, I thought was overbet at 2-1 in a race that came back pretty strong. Ishmi and the runner-up came back to crush a field. And Carnivore relaxed nicely that day, got a little bit more, showed a little bit more early speed. And then last time out was bet heavily in a conditional claimer. Didn't get out of the gates well. The race ended up collapsing. But I thought Carnivore ran pretty well that day. That was the one-turn mile. Now stretches out to two turns. And I think it's positive that Diodoro protects this son of Run Happy. It's always a concern shipping out to Del Mar, or any new track for that matter, Steve, of how a horse will take to the surface, especially not having a race or workout even over it. But I think if Carnivore does take to the surface and to the ship at 5-1, I think Carnivore is a...
Yep,
you there?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Okay, good. Sorry, it was clicked away. So I'm going to start the card off with Carnivore in the opener.
And, sounds good.
And then in the second race, I like number eight, Time to Party. This is a five furlong turf sprint. We'll see lots of these at Del Mar. Rails in. Just keep in mind as the meet goes on, when the rails are out, it changes things quite a bit. A lot tougher to come with those wide sweeping moves like it is, in many racetracks. But I found it particularly evident in my time spent capping and being at Del Mar. But I think Time to Party ran real well for Peter Miller, or with Ruben Alvarado at the time, first off the bench, last time out, showed speed, popped the gate at almost 12-1 and lost by just a neck. Now I think we'll be able to relax a little bit more kindly with the start under his belt, and at 4-1, I think Time to Party makes quite a big upset in the second. So that's the opinions in the first couple of races.
Very good. So an early double, Carnivore and Time to Party from Scott Shapiro. Dive into Saturday, Scott.
Okay. Let's see. Well, first, in terms of Saturday at Del Mar,
A couple opinions there. Starting in race 7, you don't see too many state bred special weight events with horses that debuted at Churchill Downs. But number 4, Loyal to a Fault. I know you and Brad were talking about these cowbred special weight events and how full the fields are. This is no exception. Loyal to a Fault did very little running on debut on June 10th at Churchill. That was a very live group. Empire My Own, Free Drop Maddie, Holiday Decision, all horses that would be heavily, heavily favored against these state breds. Loyal Fault didn't do any running, but I think it was almost on purpose because now she's eligible for the Ship and Win. She's raced just in Kentucky, had been out here for a little while, but mostly has trained in California. Now you get the blinkers, the decrease in competition. So in race 7, which kicks off the very, very challenging late pick 5 on Saturday, I like Loyal to a Fault at 5-1 on the line. And in the 10th race, a high-level optional claimer, certainly CZ Rocket, Diamond Hoops, you know, the class of the field. Much respect for both of those runners. I think number 10, Apprehend, is interesting in here. Second start off the bench again, another one for Peter Miller. Not a lot of speed signed on for a race of this nature, Steve, and I think Apprehend is going to get a perfect outside stalking trip. Well, oftentimes those are the perfect trips to have at Del Mar out off the rail, taking advantage of a sometimes biased racetrack. And I think Apprehend at 12-1 on the line gets that perfect trip and can upset this bunch. Pretty good field and a very challenging pick, late pick 5.
Yeah, no doubt. All right.
And let's see. Just a couple of Saratogas today, if I may.
Sure.
Race 2 is a fun maiden special weight event over the inner turf, 3-year-olds and up. And I like clubbing in here. The Chad Brown entry looks like it's going to take quite a bit of money if they both stay in, especially Growth Capital had his chances. Indemnify looks well-bred, but I think clubbing's interesting. Second start for Shug McGahee. The first one was race washed off the side over the mud, gone one turn, and he was certainly green in there, but this is a horse, in my estimation, that'll be doing his best running, gone two turns on the turf, is a full passing out, who did all of his best running, gone two turns on the turf, and actually won on debut. We don't see that often for Shug horses, but I think clubbing is going to take a big step forward here in the second, which obviously kicks off the early pick 4 at the Spa today.
That's a good race.
No, it is a fun race. I think you kind of have to take a chance. I mean, maybe Indemnify is all that, but Growth Capital is a horse that's had chances. Fort Ticonderoga ran okay last time out, but just seems like a horse you're supposed to try to beat if they're, you know, an entry you're supposed to try to beat if they're even money or anywhere near that based on the morning line, which is, you know, the best in the country from David. And in the late George, I think Dolce Zell is, you know, second choice on the morning line, but the clear horse to beat in here. You know, the turf course on Oaks Day when she was last seen, very much an outside favoring course. New Year's Eve, the winner for Brennan Walsh, took advantage of it. We saw McCulloch, who got off the rail but was along the inside most of the way, come back and run huge in her next start. I think Dolce Zell will run much better, was along that inside throughout most of the running and then found traffic issues. And I just don't think the running line does much to show how well she ran. And now freshened up by Chad, and I'm expecting a big race from this daughter of Zell Zell.
I saw it pretty much the same way, actually, as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Eminent Victor, Koala Princess, a little bit of a wild card, right? But coming off the bench, maybe better at one turn when all said and done for Arnold Davacore. But the pedigree doesn't suggest it, but when I watched the horse's 3 races as a 2-year-old, I kind of thought it. But I had a little bit of trouble in the Breeders' Cup.
Anything else?
I think that's it. I'm not in love with tomorrow's card at Saratoga. I mean, fun card, but came up with too many favorites in my handicapping, so but really excited, Steve, for the Haskell, getting to see Jack Christopher and Taba amongst the others. Should be a lot of fun, and the coaching club American Oaks, getting to see Secret Oath and Nest battle should be fun as well. But just wanted to remind people about the Saratoga Bet Back promotion today. Races 5, 6, 8, and 9 on Twin Spires, get your money back up to $10 your horse runs second, and then tomorrow races 6, 7, 10, and 11. So just go to your offers page on the website or the app and make sure to opt in. And one final reminder that, you know, all my picks for Del Mar all meet long will be available under the expert picks videos on the app and on the website.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Chapp, 34. Scott, we'll rely on you for Del Mar Insights, and best of luck down at Oceanside. We will take a break right here, an hour in, a couple past the top of the hour. Marcus Hirsch is standing by, bicycled from Illinois, I think, right? Did you... Off the train. I love it. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us live right here at Monmouth Park. Next, let's take a break. Back after this, it's Weekend Preview presented by Twin Spires. And we got plenty to do yet with Marcus and Dave Grenig and Ron Gierkink and more. Stay where you are. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.